I'm Matthew Petty, and this is Intersection. This week, 90.7's news team is taking an in-depth look at Sunrail. The first phase of the commuter train launches May 1st and will run 32 miles from Debarry to Sandlake Road. As part of our Sunrail series, I'll talk to a panel of experts about urban planning and the critical last mile for commuters taking the train. And later in the program, I'll speak with Metroplan Orlando's Executive Director Harry Barley about the future of mass transit in Central Florida. That's ahead on Intersection. I'm joined in the studio now by Peter Martinez. Peter is from Cycle Hop. That's the organisation which is planning Orlando's bike share program. Peter, thanks for coming back.
No problem. Thank you for having me.
We're also joined by Steve Olson. Steve is the Public Information Officer for Florida Department of Transportation, and he's been overseeing the rollout of Sunrail. Steve, thank you for joining us.
Glad to be here.
And we're joined also by Courtney Miller. Courtney is the Program Manager from Rethink Your Commute in Orlando. Courtney, thank you for coming in.
Thank you.
Also joining us is Curtis Ostrodka, Senior Project Manager of Urban Planning at VHB. Curtis, thank you very much for coming by.
Thank you for inviting us.
Well, Steve, I want to start with you. Planning for commuter rail began more than two decades ago with a Central Florida Commuter Rail Authority feasibility study way back in 1992. That's quite some years on the clock. Is the train ready to go for this Thursday?
We're ready to go. May 1st is the rollout for Sunrail, and we're anxiously looking forward to it. You know, and you mentioned that it's been around for many years, and the team has been working on it, some of the folks on our team, almost 10 years. And I think, you know, on this historic day, you want to make sure you're not just checking something off on the list. You know, Sunrail out the gate, check. And take about 30 seconds and say, this is history, breathe in. And then get down to work. And it's going to be a very interesting and we anticipate a pretty busy day on May 1st.
And when you mention history, in some ways it's kind of back to the future. We're trying to revert to a mode of transportation that was pretty popular, you know, last century and before that and fell out of favor for a while.
Well, you know, the motor vehicle, the car has taken over and a lot of the emphasis is on, you know, surface streets, interstates, toll roads and such, you know. But you get to a certain point where you can only build so wide and you can only build so much, and you have to start looking at other ways of moving a lot of people. And that's where rail and mass transit comes in.
Mm-hmm. Now, initially, there was to be a soft launch with some free service running in April, and then the launch date, the actual launch date of May 1st. Steve, can you tell me why that soft launch with the free service was pushed back by a couple of weeks?
Well, we needed a little extra time to work on that. I mean, May 1st was going to be the opening date anyway. Mm-hmm. So we said, you know, we could use some time to work on some things behind the scenes, things with the ticket vending machines, getting the signals and a lot of the synchronization just right on that train line. So we could have used that extra couple weeks. So we said, you know, May 1st is going to be the day that we were going to start anyway. Let's have our soft opening then so that, you know, it's free rides May 1st and 2nd, May 5th through the 9th, and then May 12th through the 16th. You know, service not on the weekends, but for about 12 days, it's going to be free service. May 19th, we collect revenue.
And when you talk about behind the scenes, what about the integration of, say, Sunrail and Lynx? Because my understanding is if you get a ticket, you should be able to use your ticket on Sunrail and on Lynx for a kind of a seamless experience. Is that all kind of up and running?
Yeah, and that's going to be really pretty neat. For instance, let's just stay in Orange County. Let's not factor in the dollar upcharge as you cross county lines. Let's say you pick up the train in Maitland and you ride it all the way down to the Sandlake Road station. It's $2. That's your base fee before any sort of discounts. And let's say you're down at Sandlake. You say, you know, it'd be really nice if I could get out to the airport. You catch the bus there, and there's an express bus that goes to the airport. And there are buses downtown and such where you can transfer over to a Lynx bus. Same up in Volusia with Votran as well. So we've worked out a lot of connectivity with the mass transit providers.
Mm-hmm. And just as a reminder, I mean, one thing that comes across when we've been out talking to folks about Sunrail, whether they're going to ride it or not, sometimes there is a little confusion. I know that Sunrail has had an advertising campaign going to remind people where the train goes. The first phase is 32 miles. It runs from Debarry to Sand Lake. It does not go to the airport yet. It's not going to take you to Miami. I mean, is that something you run into when you the sort of pre-launch rollouts at stations of people sort of come prepared knowing what it is? Or is there still a little confusion about what and where and when Sunrail is going to run?
I think the general public here in Central Florida knows where it's going to run, pretty much the corridor, that eventually with the build-out, it's going to go from DeLand to Point Siena, Phase 1, of course, to Barrie to Sand Lake Road. But we will still get occasional questions, is that the train to Tampa or is that the train to Miami or is this the one that's going to be going to the airport? So, you know, there's a certain amount of explaining that one has to do, but it's great to have those questions. I mean, people are curious, they're asking, and they want to know more.
Mm-hmm. Pete, I want to turn to you now and talk a little about the so-called last mile. Now, this is one of the things which planners talk about, any kind of mass transit system. How do you get people, you know, once they've gotten off the train or the bus or whatever it is, how do they then get from there to the last final destination? And just explain to me a little bit about what the Orlando Bike Share Program is going to be and how it's going to fit in with Sunrail.
The Bike Share Program is going to be a network of stations with bicycles dispersed around the city, so we're going to have some around the Sunrail stops. You could go from the Sunrail stop in, for example, Church Street.
Mm-hmm.
You can take it all the way to Thornton Park if you need to.
It seems like a good opportunity to be bringing something like Bike Share to Central Florida with the rollout of something like Sunrail. How far off are you guys from launching?
We launch at the end of the year.
Mm-hmm. And just a couple of technical details. If I want to rent a bike, what am I looking at paying and can I do it through my Sunrail card? How is that going to work?
We haven't integrated it with Sunrail as of yet, but when we roll out in December, we're going to have different packages for different people. So your tourist, your visitor is going to have a $5 day pass, and your commuter, your everyday person that, you know, for example, probably lives downtown or works in Florida Hospital, that'll be about $80. So it'll be $79 for the year.
Mm-hmm. Which is a good deal if you don't want to splash out on a bike of your own, I suppose.
Right.
How far could you ride on one of these bikes comfortably in a day, for example?
I want to say about a couple miles. I mean, 5 miles is a good comfortable ride in a day for the bike share system.
Mm-hmm.
The average, for example, in Washington, D.C., the average rider took a trip. It was 1.3 miles. So.
Okay. So you're kind of trundling along at a pretty leisurely speed.
Right.
You're listening to Intersection on 90.7 News. I'm Matthew Petty. I'm speaking with Steve Olson from FDOT, Courtney Miller from Rethink Your Commute, bike share planner Peter Martinez, and Curtis Ostrodka from VHB. You can join the conversation online through Facebook and Twitter using the hashtag WMFESunrail. You can also send us an email, intersection@wmfe.org. Courtney, I want to turn to you now. One of the challenges of a new transportation system is getting people to change their behavior, how they use that system, maybe get them out of a car. How have you been reaching out to car commuters to try and get them to rethink the way they get around and maybe try the train instead?
Well, we launched in 2010, so we had a good head start, not just here in Orange County, but 9 counties that composes District 5.
Mm-hmm.
And we really kind of worked the behavior change cycle. So first, even educating people about what the options are and then stepping them through what works for them. Getting them to try it is always important and kind of an interesting step to see people go through. But once people try it, if it does work for them, they commit. And then whether that's vanpooling, whether that's biking or riding transit, currently Lynx, in the future, not too far,
mm-hmm.
Sunrail, when it works for them, people do make the change and they leave their car keys at home.
If you compare Orlando to other cities around the United States, how does this city rank in terms of the kinds of businesses or the number of businesses perhaps that might provide employees with some alternative to driving in their own car to and from work?
I think it's fair to say we're behind the curve. But when you compare the southern states against the northeastern states, I think that applies not just to Florida.
Mm-hmm.
And that's partly because in the Northeast, there's more transit options, a bigger transit network, whether that is the train or fixed route buses. And it's just a part of the culture more.
Are people skeptical? Do you find people saying, Sunrail, that's not going to work? Or are they really sort of interested and keen to ride it?
People are extremely interested. I've been blown away by the enthusiasm and the creativity people have brought to figuring out their own last mile connections, whether it's figuring out, well, I'll get off the train and I'll take this bus or I'll get off the train and I'm going to bike.
Mm-hmm.
And they've never rode their bike before. But people are really excited about the train and they are willing to try new things to be able to be on Sunrail.
I'm wondering, Courtney, if you could talk a little bit about car share. How does car sharing fit into the kind of rethinking your commute model?
Car share, it's hourly car rental. We see this in other areas, D.C., even also in Florida and Tampa and Miami. And the idea is giving commuters access to cars to use as they need. As we set it up with Hertz 24/7, our car share vendor, it's not necessarily the last mile solution. It's mm-hmm. really for midday convenience. So we have these commuters who are used to having their freedom, used to having independence to run errands during the day. They can still do that because of the Hertz 24/7 program. We have 12 cars stationed throughout downtown Orlando. Primarily, that's because that's where the density is in terms of jobs, but also residential density. So it's also for people who work downtown. Mm-hmm. Rates start at $8 an hour, and it includes gas and insurance. So whether you rode the train into work and maybe you have to run that errand for your wife, or maybe you need to attend a meeting on iDrive or another area of town, you would still be able to do that.
Well, Curtis, I want to turn to you now. VHB's been working with the Florida Department of Transportation on SunRail since around 2006, providing engineering, environmental design, transit planning for the project. What have some of the challenges been of trying to get a car-centric location like Orlando and Central Florida ready for a commuter train?
Well, that's a great question, Matthew. We do have a long history of automobile needs being placed before the needs of pedestrians, and changing that mindset is probably the biggest challenge. And the other folks here mentioned how we need to rethink our commute and look at, you know, how we can move people either through bicycles or through these great mass transit, new methods of doing that.
Sure. If you look at somewhere like Orlando, you know, the way the SunRail train works, that there are obviously places like downtown, like Winter Park, Florida Hospital, which has come up. Those are good locations for a station and for some development around that. But there are other train stops that are perhaps a little more challenging in terms of development and getting people in and out of those stations. Are you able to just talk a little bit about what some of the kind of design challenges are around those more far-flung locations?
Sure. Each community has, like you said, different access impediments or barriers. If you look at some place like the city of Altamont Springs, it's on a small triangular piece of land and directly fronts State Road 436, which is a major, you know, seven-lane road. So mm-hmm. just moving people north and south to get to the station is a challenge. And what they've done is they've started to change their land development codes to try and encourage a more walkable and pedestrian-oriented place. Just to the west of the station, centered around the city hall, and by creating that special place, they're trying to encourage more people to live there with higher density residential housing. So maybe you don't need to cross the large, you know, seven lane interchange.
Steve, I just want to come back to you. You know, there are some people who express some concerns about having a commuter train in their backyard sometimes. There's people who are worried that it's going to be noisy. You know, these trains are going to be running a lot more frequently than the freight trains that rumble through every couple hours or so now. What's the Department of Transportation been doing to try and mitigate some of those challenges or fears that people have?
Our train, you know, we've tried to mitigate it as much as possible by lowering our train horns. We've tried to make it a little more directional rather than, you know, with the sound fanning out like you have on a typical freight train or Amtrak train. But again, our footprint is going to be such where we're in and out. I mean, our trains are going to be three long, a locomotive, mm-hmm. two passenger cars. Maybe in some cases we might extend it to three passenger cars. So we're going to be just, you know, in and out of an area.
In terms of those trains going through pretty quickly, I mean, how long would you be waiting? Say you're a motorist, the barriers come down. What's the kind of average wait time for a train like this?
Probably less than what your traffic signal is going to be. The gates will drop, the train will go through, and then go up again. I mean, we've got a program where the gates are dropping a little later.
Is there a danger inherent in that? In that, you know, you read about people trying to get around the barriers for freight trains and getting pinged by a train. If they see a SunRail train coming, they'll think, well, I can get around it because it's going slower. It's a shorter train.
Well, we certainly hope not. I mean, it's we have a safety campaign out there. We're working with law enforcement. You know, the gates are been redone and a lot of signalization out there. But it's you know, that safety message is going to be vital. I mean, we've communicated that where, you know, and we're doing some enforcement campaigns with law enforcement, and you're going to be seeing more of that when SunRail's there. But that's a major issue, mm-hmm. and that's something that we really, really need the public to buy into. I mean, we can't swerve, we can't stop quickly. So, you know, when that gate drops, you know, you got to stop pedestrians and vehicle traffic.
Speaking of safety, I just want to come back to you briefly, Peter. Now, in terms of the safety on the roads with your bike share program, obviously there are some cities within Central Florida that are pretty well set up for it. Winter Park, for example, they're pretty well situated for bike share. When planning where to put these bike share locations and thinking about where people might be taking their bikes, how do you sort of guide people so they're not heading onto dangerous stretches of road for cyclists?
Well, with every membership that we disperse out there, they're going to have safety rules and, you know, to follow within the city. So, for example, the city of Orlando does not allow bicycles on the sidewalk. So that's one of the key facts that we're going to have to share with the members. As far as someone going out to Colonial Drive, you know, we hope that they can find alternate routes there. And we're going to help share different routes that people could take that are not dangerous. That kind of parallel, for example, Colonial Drive. You can go a block or two south and you can find a real safe route to go east and west compared mm-hmm. to going through Colonial Drive.
In terms of the way the program is funded, I mean, is there any revenue coming through from SunRail to get this up and running? How does that work?
We are relying on sponsorship and advertising solely. We're not getting any money from Department of Transportation or the city or the county. Mm-hmm. This is all a privately venture.
So the bikes are essentially kind of like a mobile billboard, and you're then selling advertising to put on those bikes.
Right.
Curtis, I want to ask you too, looking at the SunRail kind of spine going through Central Florida as a whole, how big of a game changer is this in terms of what kind of development we're going to see springing up throughout Central Florida, not just Orlando, over the next 5, 10, 15 years?
Well, Matthew, I think there's going to be some tremendous real estate and development opportunities. SunRail is projected to have an $8 billion economic impact, $8 billion. So there's a tremendous amount of spinoff either in direct jobs, construction jobs, new multifamily and other types of housing. The data supports that there's going to be a big return on investment for anybody that chooses to get in the game.
Have you started to see any of that change in real estate pricing around the SunRail stops, even though the service hasn't actually started yet?
Well, I think you can see in downtown Orlando where there's been a couple of new projects that are off the ground. There's the Rita property at right next to Link Central Station. So the folks that live there will not only be next to the central hub for the regional bus service, but they'll be able to walk to the SunRail, as well as being in the central business district of the region, which is great for them. Mm-hmm. You look at other areas like Lake Mary, where the city has invested $2.3 million to purchase property with the intent of creating a new public-private partnership to provide more redevelopment around that station.
Finally, Steve, I just want to ask you, and I know that SunRail is in your court for the next 7 years, and that might seem like a long time, but when you look at a mass transit project of this size, it's really not that long at all. Is that long enough for the local authorities to get organized to be able to pay for the service once Florida Department of Transportation, you know, takes its hands off?
Well, we think so, and we're not just going to go and drop it in their lap. There's probably going to be a time where a little bit of an overlap between the time we turn it over to the local governments and then they're actually running it. Right now, they serve as an advisory capacity, and we're funding the program. And then in the years coming, that's going to flip-flop. And then again, we, meaning all of us in this room, all the state taxpayers, own that line too, that 61.5-mile line from DeLand down to Point Siena. So that is something that we would be managing in the future as well.
Mm-hmm. I've been speaking to Steve Olson. He is the Public Information Officer for Florida Department of Transportation. We've been talking about the impending arrival of SunRail. Steve, thank you very much for coming in.
Oh, thank you so much.
We've been also speaking to Peter Martinez from CycleHop, the organization that is bringing bike share to Central Florida and Orlando. Peter, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
And we've been speaking to Courtney Miller. Courtney is the program manager from Rethink Your Commute here in Orlando. Courtney, thanks for coming in.
Thanks so much.
And also, we've been speaking to Curtis Ostrodka. He's the senior project manager of urban planning at VHB. Curtis, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you, Matthew.
Up next, a conversation with Metroplan Orlando's Executive Director Harry Barley about SunRail and the future of mass transit in Central Florida. I'm joined in the studio now by Harry Barley. He is the Executive Director at Metroplan Orlando. Harry, thanks very much for coming in.
Thank you for the invitation.
Well, in 2007, Seminole, Orange, Osceola, and Volusia counties voted to approve SunRail along with the City of Orlando. But in the intervening years, it hasn't been a completely smooth ride to get this commuter train up and running. There have been some issues with negotiations to use the tracks, also negotiating with Amtrak, getting approval from state lawmakers, also a six-month freeze imposed on the project in 2011 by Governor Rick Scott before he finally gave it the go-ahead. Some tough times. It's always tricky getting a project as complex and big as this up and running. What does it mean finally getting SunRail to the people here in Central Florida?
Well, it means a huge regional accomplishment. And the fact that I think as a region, we finally come to accept the fact the change is necessary. We are a more urban place than we were at one point in time. And that means a total change in our approach with respect to how we see the region's transportation system.
The total cost, once the extra two segments get up and running around about 2015, is it's more than $1 billion, $1.2 billion, or thereabouts. Has it been worth it, do you think, or is it still hard to say that at this stage?
Well, transportation projects of this scale are not inexpensive, and while the numbers you've quoted are big numbers, many people aren't aware of what we spend on highway projects. I mean, we invest routinely between $800 and $1 billion every year in our region's transportation system here in Central Florida. And that translates very directly into keeping our economy humming and providing people with the kind of mobility that they need. So the rail cost estimates, very, very new for people here, but when you compare them with the costs of highway, they're on an even par, and I think long-term it'll prove to be a wise investment.
For somebody, Harry, as involved as you are in mass transit and transportation in general, you obviously have a different perspective on this project and other transportation issues than the average person on the street. Do you feel like a good enough job has been done of selling SunRail to the people? Are people well enough aware of what it is and where it goes?
Well, there's been a lot of outreach to help people understand that, but there's still a lot of confusion, and I think it points to the difficulties in trying to reach everybody.
Do you think it's going to be a success? Do you think it'll get enough riders to make the service work down the track?
Well, you know, we have sophisticated computer models that try to help us understand that type of thing. It's just part of a good planning process and part of helping us figure out where's the right place to invest. But computer models can only go so far. I call it the crystal ball. Human behavior is human behavior and very, very tough to model.
Mm-hmm. You know, from Metroplan's point of view, how important is SunRail to that sort of shift in the way people get around sort of 10, 20 years into the future?
Well, very important. Since we began work on the project on SunRail, actually the work began seriously back in 1999. But we've always seen this as the first part of a larger regional rail transit system. So the 61-mile SunRail project, as most people know it today, from DeLand in Volusia County down to Point Siena, the full Phase 1 and Phase 2, is really just the first piece of something larger.
From your point of view, what have been the trickiest things in getting this going?
Well, you acknowledged a couple of them at the start of the program, having to do with some of the difficulties in generating the necessary support. But as you look around the country, when communities are ready to make this kind of change, you'll find the same type of challenges with people wondering whether or not this is necessary, negotiating with all the parties that are involved, in some cases needing to buy complete right-of-way if there's not a rail line in place already, bringing all the funding partners together on how to pay for it. This type of controversy is not unusual. It's typical associated with something new and something different.
Mm-hmm.
But what you often see in those same cities that have done this before we have is you no sooner get that first piece in place, and excitement begins to grow in terms of what's next. When is this going to come to my business? When is this going to come to my neighborhood? And we've already seen some signs of that here in Central Florida.
you might be referring to, I'm guessing, maybe the Orange Blossom Express. I'm wondering, you know, the success of that project, which sort of goes off on a tangent to where SunRail goes, how important do you think SunRail's success is for getting Orange Blossom Express up and running?
Very important. I mean, the first priority is SunRail Phase 1, which goes from DeBary down to the Sand Lake Road Station. The next priority is the extension north in Volusia County up to the DeLand Station. And further south between the Sand Lake Road Station and the Poinciana Station in Osceola County. So those are the two immediate priorities. But we've already got the planning work in place for three, maybe even four extensions, prospective extensions. One, some folks have been quick to brand it, the Orange Blossom Express. This would be operating in the U.S. 441 corridor between downtown Orlando and out to our neighbors in Lake County, the cities of Mount Dora, Eustace, and Tavares. That corridor is a little unusual in that it already has an underutilized freight line in the 441 corridor. So that presents an opportunity with perhaps taking advantage of that rail line that's in place, much like with the A line that was already in place for SunRail. But the way we do this type of thing is to look at the needs in the corridor, to look at a variety of transportation solutions, and then it's eventually the role of the Metroplan Orlando Board, and in this case the Lake Sumter MPO Board as well, to determine what's the appropriate transportation solution long-term for that corridor. So that's one of the studies that's underway, and there are a few more as well.
Mm-hmm. Another mass transit option that people have talked about and we've talked about on our program here at Intersection before is the possibility of having a magnetic levitation train between the airport and downtown. I know that Metroplan has had some input into that as well. How would this fit into something like SunRail?
Well, we had a private firm approach us a while ago about using a low-speed, innovative maglev technology vehicle. But that one was to connect the Orange County Convention Center with the Sand Lake Road SunRail Station, Florida Mall, and Orlando International Airport. So that is still a proposal that's being evaluated. The Florida Department of Transportation did the competitive work that needed to be done to see who else might be interested in doing that type of thing. And there were no other proposals submitted. So it is now the proposal by the American Maglev team that's under review to see if that might be a viable solution for connecting the Orange County Convention Center with the airport. Very important.
Talking about projects like American Maglev technology and comparing that to say, SunRail and also All Aboard Florida you mentioned before, I'm wondering, you know, from the point of view of SunRail, there's a lot of public money that's gone into it. But from the point of view of these other projects, it's more about private funding. Mm-hmm. In the future, with other possible mass transit projects getting up and running, do you think private money is going to be more important?
Yeah, this is part of the changing nature of the transportation industry. We're going to see a lot more involvement from the private sector, and I think that's very, very positive. In some cases, they will be private investments, and in other cases, they will be public-private partnerships. But at Metroplan Orlando, we are very open to this type of thing, and I think that's going to be a large part of our transportation future.
Mm-hmm. Will you be riding SunRail when it starts?
I will.
I've been speaking to Harry Bailey. He's the Executive Director at Metroplan Orlando. We've been talking about the upcoming start of SunRail. Harry, thank you very much for joining me.
Thank you, Matthew.
The conversation about what's happening in Florida continues online at wmfe.org/intersection. There you can also sign up for our weekly podcast. Support for Intersection comes from our listeners. Brendan Byrne is assistant producer. I'm Matthew Petty. Thanks for listening.